Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like it's just me tonight here live on UWC Radio. Don't forget, you can check out UnitedWrestlingCouncil.com to check out all the latest information that we got going on. Talked to Manny day before yesterday, and because we're trying to get that show together at Paul's Photos. I mean, that area right there hasn't been tapped into like it should be, so we have some serious inquiries going on to get that show going over there. So he's actually... I can't go to the meeting, but he's going to actually meet up with Mark, who's the main man from Paul's Photo, to see if they can work something out, because it was a few red flags that we had to take care of or whatever before we could do the show over there. So we talked and told Manny, look, man, we really want to do the show there, but if it doesn't work out, we might have to go somewhere else. So hopefully we'll be able to get that stuff going and it'll be good to go. So I'm looking forward to that. We're going to negotiate, try to get some stuff going, because Paul's Photos been a big supporter of UWC from the beginning. So hopefully that's going to come to fruition. I don't know what Pete Jr. is doing, and I don't know what Sonya is doing or whatever. I didn't call them because I just literally got off work, barely got in, barely put the show up, and got everything ready to roll, because Eddie Bernal Jr. is going to come on. I had Eddie Bernal on my other show, and come to find out that that's a different Eddie Bernal. So what are the chances of Eddie Bernal and Eddie Bernal Jr. both being fighters, both having the same name or whatever, but we're going to have Eddie Bernal Jr. on, who actually Manny talked to his coach, Tim Cartmill, and who, when I did some research, who trained with Clever Luciano, who I'm totally familiar with. We did a few live broadcasts from his place when he had his place in Huntington Beach. So I'm looking forward to having Eddie Bernal on. He's going to be on at about the 15-minute mark. So we look forward to that. So, but, I was hoping that we could get Nicolette or somebody to call in, because we did the show over at the Doll Hut for ASCW, and I usually go home right after. I do my stuff or whatever, but Nicolette and I wanted to stay and watch the main event, because it was BC Killer against T-Rex, and it was barbed wire around the ropes. It was lit candlesticks on a table. There was a bed of forks, thumbtacks. There was just all kinds of stuff. So we wanted to check light tubes, of course. So we wanted to stay and check that out. And I'm just going to be honest, I used BC Killer's wife as a barricade, because I was right behind her while she was filming. So when the tubes of glass started flying, I just went behind her, ducked behind her. And I don't think she took too much shrapnel or whatever, but I think I put one or two of those videos up there. So we'll check it out. Oh, here we go. Let me just get this real quick or whatever. Hang on one second here. Hey, Nicolette, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, I want to talk about the big show that you have coming up, but before we get into that, we haven't even had a chance to talk about that show or whatever, because last time, we left after we did our match and stuff or whatever. But, I was just telling the people how I was using BC Killer's, not using, but, I stood behind BC Killer's wife because she was filming also, because the shrapnel, it's kind of dangerous because that stuff goes flying everywhere. So first of all, give me your thoughts on that match itself, and then give me your thoughts on what do you think about that. You're kind of taking a risk, don't you think, when shrapnel like that's flying?
Oh, sure. So actually, I'll kind of back it up a little bit. Remember, one of the shows that I've always talked about on this podcast that you and I went to, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but two of the best independent shows that you and I have been to was PCW, was Jacob Fatu and Eddie Kingston.
Yes.
And then the second
yes.
was when we went to UEW. I was getting ready to graduate, and I called you from where I was working at, and I was like, hey, I'm going to get us tickets to go to UEW. I'm going to put us in the second row. And you were like, okay, cool. I was like, be ready at this time. And then we went. They actually upgraded our tickets, so we were in the front row. And we got
yes.
to see BC Killer and T-Rex. And we were kind of like, oh, like holding, like, okay, hey, like every man for themselves, like you go a certain way with your bad hips, if something happens, and I'll go this way, you know? And so Favi and I had already did our match, and then we were like kind of waiting behind the gate, but we kind of had like limited seating behind the gate at ASCW. And so I told Favi, I'm going to go around to the other side where the vendors are at, and I'm going to watch the match from there. It was standing room only, and I didn't know that I was standing in the family section with DC Killer's family until I realized they were all chanting DC and that the son looked just like him. But yeah, it was a great match. And I even said to, I told one of my friends, I was like, I don't, there was a lot of cursing that night, but I saw on the flyer that it said all ages welcome. And my friends were like, well, who would take their baby to a death match? And I was like, yeah, you actually really can't, because what do you do with your kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And their first instinct is they want to go up and see what it's like as close as possible. You know, but then the glass starts flying. It just starts flying because they bust those tubes and it just goes out to the sides. But I got to be honest, man, I'm not so much into death matches or whatever. I think there's a place for them, but I actually enjoyed it. It's the suspense of when it's actually going to hit. You know what I mean? Because first of all, up T-Rex, he's got to be close to 4 bills or whatever. And to pick him up and throw him on a bed of forks, it's just amazing. But when you go back to talking about when we went to PCW, it was funny because they pulled that. Jacob Fatu was looking for something, so I think somebody used his stuff before his match. He pulled out that toolbox and just poured out legit tools on the ring and put Eddie Kingston on top of it. But Eddie Kingston moved, but Jacob Fatu did a moonsault and just took full stomach on a whole bunch of tools, like wrenches and hammers and screwdrivers and junk. I thought that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Well, what about you?
Well, but the funny thing is that I think that box of tools was put underneath the ring to break down the ring later that night, and I'm sure that nobody's going to tell Jacob Fatu, excuse me, did you just spill out all of our tools? They were like, okay, we'll just go pick them up and go find them later, you know? But it was cool, like, and, you know, here you pay for a ticket to go see, like, this great match put on, and they did it.
The ring crew probably just kept their mouth shut and didn't say anything, but it was great. That was one of the better shows that we went to. Hopefully we can talk a little bit more about that because I think he's bringing Black Battles for his next show. But for the people listening to us, big match coming up for Nicolette Marie. It's at the House of Warriors Wrestling. It's Saturday, November 19th. It's at the House of Grace. It's at 12222 Philadelphia Street in Whittier, California. Doors open at 4:30. Bell time is 5 p.m. I know you just got off of a Zoom session or whatever, because there's been quite a buzz about this show. Now, I'm not familiar with Los Vatos Locos or whatever they are. I am definitely familiar with Lois Grain. But when we talked about this, I thought, man, if I want Nicolette to team up with anybody, this is exactly who I will want them to team up with, because Tony Reyes and Biggie Biggs, also known as the Heavy Hitters, you know, there's quite a buzz about this match, not to take anything away from the main event or whatever, but talk a little bit about that, because both of you guys have gone back and forth on your social media, you know, kind of cutting some promos on each other. So talk a little bit about that.
So, yeah, and if you guys want to check out any of those promos, make sure you guys go to House of Warrior Wrestling on Instagram, and you guys can check. I had read on the flyer that this was a show for the Children's Youth Ministry. I guess some of the money is going back to them, and it is on a church. And so I had told Ruben that a lot of my gear is made into two pieces. I don't know if anybody saw the recent photos that were taken at ASCW, and that was a different setting. That was at a bar where it was 21 plus, 18 plus. And so I said, I'll be wearing sweats. But yes, Amanda Lois Grain is known for being the CEO of Bus. And so I asked her if she could wear some pants and have some respect for the church. And she said that, yes, she is willing to wear pants. And so I hope she does. And yes, her friends, that's what we just talked about on the Zoom session. We did a podcast with Championship on the Line podcast. And I explained to her and to everybody that was listening that Tony Reyes and Biggie Biggs are veterans just like you. And so they've been around a long time. They're much wiser in the ring. They've held championship belts, tag team belts in different federations. And Eddie Islas and Eric Rojas are on the younger side. So that's going to be a challenge for them. So they said in their promos, they're going to let myself and Lois do our thing, and then they're going to have the boys do their stuff. So, yeah, we're really excited. I think that this is going to be their first intergender match for House of Warriors.
Right. Well, speaking of that UEW show, we saw the heavy hitters. They wrestled Smoke Signals or Smoke Serpents or whatever.
Yes.
And they just, dude, they just completely annihilated those dudes. So I think the Vatos Locos might have bitten off a little bit more than they could chew. I mean, I just got to be honest or whatever. So maybe you can get, I would say put Lois in the middle. And put the Vato Locos on both sides, and then just have Tony and Biggie just come from the sides and just smash them in between in the middle. I think that would be. I'm gonna call for that since I'm gonna be at that match and see if they
can
make that.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. So for the
people
listening,
I did in one of my promos. I had said, "Hey guys, you know this is your favorite Lucha Libre Latina Barbie, Nicolette Marie. We're gonna be at House of Grace of Whittier," and then I got like all these like DMs and texts, and my friends were like, "You happened that you said that." And I was like, well, I'm not going to trademark it. I was like, but let me see if I can get the writing to do the shirts, because I do all of our own shirts. I don't know if everybody's listening.
Right.
I do my shirts. I do Bobby's shirts. And so I worked with a lady, and she was getting back to me. Like, she lived in Texas, and it was like I was getting them at, like, midnight back to me, and I was going to work the next day, and I'm like, please, like, I need this writing. So she finally did everything for me, and I printed one yesterday, and I wore it tonight on the podcast that I was on. So next week, I'm going to have those available. So if anybody wants to order one, it's going to be a pre-order, but it's in the official Barbie writing.
Yeah. Are you going to have any at the show?
I am. I'm going to have them at the show. I have the Notorious Nicolette shirts. I have these new Barbie ones, and I have Bobby's Wrestle Boss podcast shirts as well.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And I'll be there. So if you want something, come see me, and I'll make sure you get taken care of. So I'm going to give that address and everything at the end of the show for House of Warrior Wrestling. We wish you best of luck. I'm going to switch gears because I got to get Eddie Bernal Jr. in here. So for the people listening, check out Nicolette Marie
on
Facebook.
Thank you
so much. What's your Instagram handle?
Nicolette by Nature_
Okay, perfect. I'll give those at the end of the show, and I look forward to that big match. I'll talk to you soon, Nicolette Marie. We'll be right back with Eddie Bernal after this. Nicolette Marie, everybody, make sure you check it out. Here live at UWC Radio. Don't forget, you can check out UnitedWrestlingCouncil.com. Got Eddie Bernal coming up in just a minute. And just to expand a little bit on that, New Japan is on right now, and they're having their Halloween special, and they have everybody and their mother on this match. I mean, they got Moxley, Eddie Kingston, Okada, Jay White. It's like a huge, huge eight-man tag team match or whatever, so make sure you check that out. But let's give Eddie Bernal Jr. a call. And I'm going to see if he knows the other Eddie Bernal.
Hello?
Hey, Eddie, it's Fabiano. You're live on UWC Radio. Can you hear me, my friend?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Perfect. For the people listening, you're here. You're at UWC Radio. Don't forget, you can check out UnitedWrestlingCouncil.com to check out all the latest information. Get all the updates there, and then get tickets to shows if you want to check it out. But on the line with me right now, Eddie Bernal Jr. Eddie, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, we got a lot to talk about. But before it's funny because I just got off of work, and I said, Manny, the owner and the proprietor of UWC, goes, hey, man, did you call Eddie, you know, to get him? I said, I had him on the show already. She said, you did? I said, yeah. So he said, no, you didn't have him on. I'm like, what? So when I called you and I said, hey, didn't I have you on the show? You're like, no. Did you know that there's another Eddie Bernal, that he's not an MMA fighter or whatever, but he's a collegiate wrestler that just graduated, and now he's one of the assistant coaches at Pacific Palisades High School. Have you ever heard of that guy? Did you know there was another Eddie Bernal?
No, I had no idea. That's so funny.
I mean, what are the chances? You know what I mean? That it would be just like that. So anyways, Manny was psyched to have you on the show. He says, hey, man, I talked to one of his coaches, Tim Cartmell, and he's saying, hey, man, this guy's, you know, paying his dues. He's getting, you know, into the MMA scene and stuff like that. So I want to talk a little bit about that. But before we talk about that, everybody, you know, once I announce who I'm going to have on the show or whatever, everybody has sent the emails and messages and stuff like that. So before we get into talking about your career and stuff, real quick, I mean, first of all, give us your background, because this is what we talk about a lot on here. I know you're not familiar with the show or whatever, but I've been doing this for almost 17 years. I worked for Tap Out for 7 years, and then I worked for Sinister Brand for 2 years, and then I worked with On the Mat for 7, you know, Scotty Nelson. So it's been from the beginning. So real quick, before I want to talk a little bit about jiu-jitsu and grappling and stuff like that, but and I also coached wrestling for 6 years. So to me, it just seems like that grind from being a wrestler and just like take, for example, Michael Chandler's getting ready to fight Dustin Poirier. Like, those are the guys I'm kind of gravitated to, because Chandler, he's so used to that grind, and he's just like just has that wrestling mentality. So real quick, for the people listening to us at UWC, give us a little bit of your background as you venture into the MMA scene.
Right. Yeah. So it really all started back in high school. So I always was a big fan of like combat sports and even like professional wrestling. When I was younger, that's kind of how I started. I was watching WWE like every Monday and, you know, like Friday nights or Tuesday nights whenever they started changing it up. But so, you know, and as I got older, my dad started watching more like, you know, UFC started to get bigger, like guys like Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, like Anderson Silva started getting big. So I caught myself, started watching that. He goes, yeah, man, you got to check this stuff out. And I thought it was really cool, because I wasn't really too big on like boxing. Like I, for some reason, like I found boxing boring. I don't anymore. I love boxing. But when I was a kid, I was like, man, it goes 12 rounds every single time. Like nobody ever gets knocked out. And so, and this was kind of like the perfect hybrid, where it was like you would see there was some aspects of professional wrestling in it with, like, you know, the way people talked and stuff. And there was like a lot of grappling in it too, but there was also like that stand up. And so I really, really liked it. I started watching a lot with my dad. And then, so I was a huge fan. And then I was always playing baseball. Just my whole life, I was always playing baseball. And then I got to high school, and then I started wrestling. And once I started wrestling, it just like, I got so much more, I became a much bigger fan of combat sports in general, just because now that I was part of it. And then, so I wrestled for a couple of years at Survite High School, and the team was pretty good. And so I joined pretty late, because at the time, like, Survite Wrestling was a really, really big deal. They were CIF champions, and a lot of guys on the team were going to the next level. And so I was just getting my butt kicked and just getting it handed to me every single day. And so I started to get a little bit better at it. I'm like, oh, you know, this is kind of cool. And then one of my buddies from school kind of challenged me to come into to the gym, and his dad was the owner of the gym. So I came in with him, and then, you know, we kind of like duped it out a little bit, but I was like, man, I really, really like this. So he's like, you should try a class. So I tried a class with my coach, Tim, and right away, like instantly, just the way he instructed and everything, I just completely just fell in love with it. And ever since then, I've been doing jiu-jitsu ever since. And then I started boxing, I started sparring, and then, yeah, we started, somebody talked to me doing an amateur fight, and then it was kind of all from there, just took off. So it's been pretty cool.
So you got bit by the bug. Once you got bit by the bug, it just continued on from there.
Yeah, exactly. It was really, 'cause the gym is not close to my house. Like, the gym is like a solid 45 minutes without traffic, and you know, and traffic gets pretty bad over here. So really it's like an hour and a half drive, and I was still going to school and everything, but it was, to me, it was all worth it. Like, just to spend, you know, like 2 hours on the mat with Tim and learning from him and learning from all the awesome people here. It was, you know, it was worth it. So
yeah,
man, every day I'm just so lucky to be here.
Cause I think coming from a wrestling background, it's a challenge. You know what I mean? Cause it's like the next step. You know, in your career or whatever. It's just because that's kind of what I had a partner, his name was Sergio, and him and I, that's when we came up in the business, working for Tap Out and all that. We got to go, well, let me give you an example, okay? This is got to be early. I'm going to say 2003, if I'm not mistaken. We just started working for Tap Out. We're doing Tap Out Radio for them, and we went to the Durango High School in Las Vegas, and this was, I'm going to say, the first ever super fight. Okay, it was a grappler's quest, and it was Mark Layman versus Hedon Gracie, and that, it was just packed. There was over 3,000 people. The fire marshal came, cut it out. There were, like, they made it to where if two people came out, then two more people could come in or whatever. So that was our first, like, taste of something big like that. But the thing that stuck in my mind that I never forgot from that night was that, you know, the grappler's quest went off. First of all, Sergio and I competed, just like you were talking about, got our ass kicked. It was just totally, you know, different competing and grappling, submission grappling. So I remember walking outside, and Hermes Franca was competing, and he was standing outside. He had his whole full-blown gi on with his black belt with you know, stripes on and everything, and he was smoking a cigarette. And I never got that picture out of my mind. And I'm like, dude, aren't you competing or whatever? He's like, yeah, I can have a smoke real quick or whatever. But now, since then, it's evolved. You know, some of these, you know, jiu-jitsu guys or whatever, they have strength and conditioning coaches, and, you know, they go to different gyms to get different looks. So it just kind of shows how much it's evolved. So with that being said, now, you know, training jiu-jitsu and grappling. Well, first of all, the transition for Sergio and I, when all this went down and we ended up going to On the Mat, Scotty Nelson, who is the owner and the proprietor of On the Mat, he said, look, man, if you guys are going to work, you know, for me, you have to train in the gi. You know, we came from a wrestling background. We trained in the gi very sparingly. You know what I mean? And that, I mean, dude, we were getting choked out by girls or whatever, and we're like, what the heck is going on? So that's kind of the point I'm making. It just goes to a different level to where you're like, how is this happening? So was something similar like that to you, or did you start training in the gi, or you haven't trained in the gi at all?
No, yeah. So for my first couple months, I did my first class in around, like, let's say July of 2017. And I was kind of off and on for a little bit. So I had, like, this other job, and so it was kind of tough. And then once I started, that was my summer going into college, my freshman year of college. So once I started college, I kind of had a much easier schedule. So I scheduled all my classes for Mondays and Wednesdays. And so that left Tuesdays and Thursdays pretty open. So Tuesdays and Thursdays for my gym are the no-gi nights. And so I kind of did that on purpose because I didn't have a gi yet. I didn't know which kind of gi was a good gi to get. I didn't know what size I was. I didn't know where to order it from. So I was like, I'm just going to trade no-gi. You know, I'm a wrestler, so it's going to help out anyway. If I fight in the cage, it'll be more applicable, you know. So I start really training consistently in February of 2018. And really all just no gi. Like, I didn't train any gi at all. And then there was a big tournament coming up in April, and my coach was like, hey, like, I want you to do this tournament. Like, a bunch of the schools, like jiu-jitsu schools around us, like, we're all black belts from the same guy. So it's like a friendly but, like, super competitive thing. So, like, to rub it in each other's faces and stuff. And he goes, I really, really want you to go do it. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Let's do it. And he goes, but it's in the gi. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll do it in the gi. Like, how much different can it be? So I went and I weighed in, and it was the day before weigh-in. So I went and I weighed in. My first jiu-jitsu tournament ever. I'd never competed in jiu-jitsu before ever in my life. And I've been training for, you know, like, a few months. And so they let me borrow a gi from the gym. I borrowed somebody's belt. and I didn't know how to tie it or anything. And they gave me like a really, just like for a few hours, they gave me a crash course on how not to get choked out with the gi and how to use it. And like, so I went out there, I did my first tournament, and lo and behold, I got first place. I don't know how in the world that happened. I just like took everybody down. I didn't get any submissions. Like I go back now and I watch. I didn't know how to pass guard or nothing, because everybody was holding on to me in the gi. I didn't know how to break grip. So I pretty much just double-legged everybody and sat in the guard the whole time. And it was pretty boring, but I did win. So, and then I was like, man, this is a completely different world. So so then I shortly after that, I started like training gi more. And I love the gi. Like I train like every day just because this is like what I do. But I really, really enjoy the gi. And I just feel like, we talk about it for like a self-defense aspect, we feel like it's a lot more realistic, because in real life people wear clothes. Like right now I'm currently wearing a hoodie, so like somebody can grab onto that and attack me. So I feel like it's a lot more realistic. Now, if you're going to talk about like a sports setting, like MMA or something like that, then, you know, it's different. But I really learned to love the gi a lot, and I just feel like a lot more traditional martial artist with it on. But definitely training both is super important. Like if you're gonna be good at grappling, I feel like just training in both to some extent is extremely helpful and useful.
I would agree 100%. I mean, we were shocked. Well, first of all, Scotty Nelson, you know, he lived in Brazil and trained up there for a while, and that first day that we rolled with him, I mean, it was just the things that he, and then he was hitting us with those pressure points. Like he was driving, like even in your, like your salivary gland back here or whatever. So the next day we were so not beat up, like somebody punched you in the face or whatever, but just your body was just so sore, and my hands were killing me, you know, just from gripping and so it just was a whole new, you know, new thing that you're like, man. So it kind of motivates you to go, well, I got to keep going, you know, or whatever, just keep moving up. So that to me, it's like you said, it to me, it seems like when you train in the gi, I don't want to say it everything else comes easy, because it doesn't, but it just makes it, you know, that much, a little bit more easier, you know, when you're training without the gi or you're grappling or whatever. It just really makes a big difference. So real quick, I got to reset real quick. Can you hang on for just about 30 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, hang on. For the people listeners, you're here, you're at UWC Radio, and we're talking to Eddie Bernal Jr. Talk a little bit about training and training in the gi and everything. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the movement into MMA and his fight at the Commerce Casino. So hang on, everybody. We'll be right back with Eddie Bernal. Hang on. Original Ultimate Fighter theme, because we got Eddie Bernal Jr. hanging with us. So for the people listeners, don't forget you're listening to UnitedWrestlingCouncil.com. Don't forget you can check out UnitedWrestlingCouncil.com for all the latest information. But real quick, Eddie, before we get into talking about that fight that you had at the Commerce Casino, that was actually Uriah Faber event, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it was Uriah Faber's event.
I'm gonna tell you a quick story about Uriah Faber. Let me tell you something. When my partner and I, it's a long story of how we got involved with Tap Out, but we got involved with them right when they were in the struggle, and then they just started to snowball, you know, and really blossom into like one of the top mixed martial arts clothing in the world. So when we were doing Tap Out Radio and we first started, you know, we would do these little events and stuff like that, and that's how we met Ed Soares and stuff. But when we were at the peak, you know, we would go, they would take us to WEC and we would do the Spanish, like they would have us sit behind them in case the Spanish news or whatever came, we could translate for them and stuff like that. So we were everywhere. So we were so familiar with Uriah Faber because he was a WEC champ at the time and all that. And I thought he was just awesome, always nice to us or whatever. So we did a live broadcast from the fight shop or whatever that was in the Mandalay Bay. And Uriah was there. And he's like, hey, man, he goes, you guys got to come down to my house, man. He goes, I'm going to have a big barbecue and all that. You know, you lived in Sacramento. We said, yeah, man, dude, we're totally down or whatever. So we go. And Tracy Lee, who was one of the main photographers back then, she says, for Combat Lifestyle, she says, hey, you know he's vegan, right? And we're Mexican, dude. We don't know what that means. And we're like, okay, yeah, you know, whatever. So we get to this. First of all, Uriah owned, like, the whole block. He owned, like, four of the houses on this cul-de-sac, and there was one house that somebody else owned. It was the older people, but, you know, they were, you know, he really took care of them. They were really nice. So he's making all this vegan type of stuff or whatever, and my partner and I are like, well, dude, where's the carnitas and the carne asada and stuff? He's like, dude, we don't even know what that is. So we ended up leaving to go get some food and come back or whatever, and Uriah's like, dude, that's why you guys are fat or whatever. So he was always nice to us, and I was just – now, real quick, before we get into talking to your fight, to talk about moving into MMA, you know, I love Uriah Faber to death, man. I really do. But when you start getting towards the end of the career, I just wanted him to just retire and just, you know, ride off into the sunset and do what he's doing now. But he took that last fight with Peter Yan or whatever, you know, and I didn't want to see him go out that way. I mean, he's fine or whatever, but so the question I have for you is, you think sometimes that there's a time to quit, or do you think, you know, hey, man, you know, these guys are fighters. That's all they know. And they feel, you know, they get back to training or whatever, they feel 100%. They want to take that last fight because they feel good. Now, me personally, I just would like to, like, I'll give you another example. Like Diego Sanchez, he was a good friend of ours too, when back in Tapo days. And I didn't want to see him fight anymore. I really didn't. So you think sometimes maybe they should just go ahead and pack it in? Or do you think it's a matter of like, dude, this is all I know. So once I retire, I'm bored. So I want to get back into it. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely like a strict timeline, like, on this sport. And yeah, I feel like there's always going to be, like, times where you see somebody fight and it's like, man, like, I don't know if they should really be out there. Like, there's definitely better things that, you know, they could be doing. Like, but at the end of the day, really, it comes down to that one person and what they think. And, like, yeah, if that person wants to fight and somebody's out there willing to give them a fight and someone's willing to take a fight with them, that's really all you need. So, like, it's going to be really hard to convince somebody because, it's hard enough to convince somebody you're never going to be able to convince someone to do this. Like, nobody convinced me. Ultimately, I had to convince myself, like, okay, yeah, I want to step in. You can have everybody in the world telling you, listen, you're a complete badass. You can go in there, you can do this. But if you don't want to go in there and do it, then you're not going to do it. And it's right. The same way it goes for the opposite, where everybody can be telling you to hang it up. But if you still believe in yourself that you can go out there and you can do it, then ultimately, you know, you're going to end up finding yourself in the cage no matter what anybody says.
And let me tell you something. I don't care if you're 0-6 or whatever. I have the utmost respect for anybody who steps in that cage because all through all this, I got lucky. I was working for a company called Long Beach Fight Night and they needed an announcer and I started working for them. And Mike Lowe, who was working for King of the Cage at the time, he said, hey man, we have so many shows coming. You know, can you back up Dean Stone, who's the main announcer? I'm like, absolutely. So I was doing like 12 shows a year. So the first show that I did, you know, you go and you make your announcements and then you sit right there by the side of the cage. And just, you know, I saw this guy, you know, take a good kick right to the liver. And when you're right there and, you know, you see that connect and it just takes a second and he goes down, I'm like, good Lord, that was the hardest kick I've ever seen. So ever since that day, I don't care who you are. Once that cage door closes, it's you and your opponent. That's it. There's nobody helping you or whatever. So it takes a lot of guts to get in that cage. So talking about that, now the fight you had at Uriah Faber's combat at the Commerce Casino, that was your pro debut, right? Well, take us through that. I mean, take us through that, just the whole thing, getting there, weighing in, because a lot of people don't see that behind the scenes. You know, a lot of times if guys don't make weight, you still want to fight, you got to redo the contracts, and, you know, it takes a lot. So take us through that first pro fight, you know, from the weigh-in. You know, was it a struggle to make weight, or do you try to keep yourself, you know, at least, you know, I don't know, 5 to 10 pounds from your fighting weight? Or take us through the beginning of that big fight at the Converse Casino.
Right, absolutely. So we got the call probably around, I would say, like early July. They're like, hey, you know, your Rye Faber is doing a show. They're looking for fighters. Somebody told them about you. And the one that actually got the word to your Rye Faber about us was Curtis Millender. But he also, I know he's a big pro wrestling fan, and he's a former UFC fighter, and he fought in Bellator and all that. And so shout out to him, because he's the one that really got my name out there. So, so they told us about that, and they're like, okay, you know, because I was coming off a pretty bad rib injury. Like, I tore my cartilage in my rib really bad, and so that was a horrible injury, and it took a while for that to heal. So we were healing from that. I'm like, okay, I feel like I'll be healed in time. So, so we always knew that when I fought pro, I was going to be fighting at 135. So for California, the amateurs, when you fight amateur MMA, you weigh in the same day. So you weigh in the morning of, and then you fight later that night. So I was fighting 145. And so when I fought pro, now it becomes the day before weigh-in. So since we weigh in the day before, we're going to have a whole day to rehydrate, and we're going to cut 10 more pounds. So I never had like a nutritionist. I never had like a dietitian working with me. It was all just like bro sciencing it. It was just me by myself. Okay, like, if I eat this, I know this is good to eat. If I just eat less of it as the fight gets closer and I cut water out like towards the end, I'll be good. So this time we went with our the guy actually used to train at our gym, Dan, and so he helped me out big time. So we hopped on like the meal plan and all the like, dieting like in mid-July. So I remember my birthday's in July, middle of July, so I hopped on it right after my birthday. So I checked my weight. I was 168 and a half. And I was like, okay, so I have to get down to 135. And I wasn't like, don't get me wrong, I wasn't like fat, like there was no double chin, no nothing, but I was, you know,
myself.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, well, you know, so I hopped on the meals, started training, started doing everything. And like the whole time I was like, man, I haven't been 135 since I was like a little kid, or I was like, you know, when I was in eighth grade or something. So that whole time I was thinking about that. And everything was like, wait, wait, wait. Like, my coach was like, hey, how's the weight? And so, like, it almost became more about the weight than it did about the fight. And it wasn't until, like, 2 weeks before the fight where I had to go to, like, this doctor to get all the medical stuff done for my license. And so I go in there. I got to do the blood test. I got to do the eye test, the EKG, the MRI, everything. So I show up there, and my opponent's there. And we're in this tiny little room, like tiny, tiny, tiny. And he's sitting right there. And I'm like, it just hit me. I was like, oh, my God. Like, I almost forgot. Like, I actually have to fight a human being after I make this weight. Like, it became like, of course, I was training and all that. But I was like, I become so focused on the weight, I forgot I actually had to go out there and fight another professional MMA fighter. Like, this, it all became so real for me. And so so the weight cut actually went pretty well. We did it, like, nice and slow. We don't put it all towards like the end. So you know, with the meals and everything, made it really easy. And especially now, like, I know, like, being younger, it helps out a lot. So the weight cut went pretty good. We made the weight pretty easily. It was 135 and a half. So now, like, I looked a lot better at 135 than I ever did 145, because I had somebody who knew what they were doing working with me, and they were like kind of weight with me, and it was really, really good. So I look like an absolute machine. Like, I've never looked that good in my life. So it wasn't fun getting down to the weight, but I definitely looked really, really good, and we put all the weight back on, and it was all really, really good. But yeah, that weight cut was something I was really worried about, but now I know like I can make it, and there's ways I can, you know, improve on it. So
it's like they say, that there's no substitute for experience. You know what I mean? Now you know what it's like or whatever. So you just, you know, you just kind of move on from there. So what's the game plan? A few more. Now that was a camel fight, right?
So that was, that was his past fight. It was my first pro fight. Yeah. So the camel fights are all 140. The camel fights are all same day weigh-ins. Well, those, I did six of those, and those were all at 145.
You know what? I got to look at my notes. It says right here, pro debut. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me, but yeah. So you just keep evolving. So what's the game plan? You know, I know you had that first fight. You're just going to keep on going, and you know, I mean, people talk a lot about the UFC. Oh, they don't pay enough fighters, and but that's the top of the line. You know, that's why everybody's what they're trying to get to or whatever. So, you know, if something like Bellator does come along, you're gonna go ahead and take that. Or would you rather wait for UFC because you got Dana White's Contender Series and stuff? Because like Bo Nickel, who was a badass wrestler from Penn State, mm-hmm. they, you know, Dana made him do a couple of fights in there, and he just ran through everybody. So. To just kind of wait and see what. Like, see, this is a lot what the people don't know, because a lot of people have a manager and a lot of people have a coach or whatever. So you kind of get together and say, well, look, man, should we go ahead and take this fight, you know, at this amount of money, or should we wait because, you know, UFC's knocking at the door, they're looking at us or whatever. How does that work out?
So, we actually about a week ago we just signed a 4-fight deal with Uriah Faber and his show.
Okay.
So we're going to be doing our next 4 fights there. Now, so we'll be doing it there. And the thing that we really liked about this was it's going to be on UFC Fight Pass.
Right.
You know, Uriah Faber obviously has that big name, and he has that connection to the UFC. So you put on some good performances in front of Uriah Faber or on UFC Fight Pass, then, you know, obviously that kind of speeds everything up. So we'll be doing 4 fights with him. And unless, we get picked up.
They'll definitely find you, you know, if you're fighting for some, because of love, Uriah Faber is legit, you know what I mean? They will definitely find you if you're fighting for this. So that's good. You know, that it's kind of smart that you kind of took your time and you know, that kind of came about and took that fight at the Uriah Faber fights or whatever. It all like makes sense. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a good thing. I think it's going to work out. Now I just got to take one more quick break, but there's so much, you know, I want to ask you before we get out of here, because I am running up against the clock, but there's a few more things. Can you hang on for just another 30 seconds?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. Hang on. We'll be right back with Eddie Bernal after this. Here at UWC Radio, and we're talking to Eddie Bernal Jr., just coming off his big fight pro debut at the Commerce Casino for Uriah Faber's combat. Real quick, when Manny called me and talked to me, he said, hey, can you get his coach on, Tim Cartmell, or whatever? So I tried to get a hold of him, but apparently, is he out of town, do you know?
Yeah, he's on his way to, I believe it's St. Louis right now, to do some seminars.
Yeah. So Ace Jiu-Jitsu, is that where you train at, the one that's in Fountain Valley, or do you, because I heard you saying you were coming from Servite or something?
Ace Jiu-Jitsu is where I train at now.
Okay. So that's Ace Jiu-Jitsu, which is in Fountain Valley. That's right. The one we're talking about, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, this is what we need to do, okay? We have all the equipment to do a live broadcast or whatever, so since we couldn't get Tim on the show, we would definitely like to come down to Ace Jiu-Jitsu and do a live broadcast, you know, because a lot of the people, you know, it's weird because we have a certain amount of people who listen to the regular show, you know, the one that we do online, but we have a totally different audience that listens to the live stuff. You know what I mean? Because they kind of like to see what the place is like and the training and stuff like that. And then we'll shoot a little video to show, you know, whatever, how to pass the guard or to get out from under or whatever. So we definitely want to come down and do that at Ace Jiu-Jitsu. So you down for something like that? Because, you know, usually it's weird because, like, I used to have my MMA podcast on Sundays. And then I had the regular wrestling podcast on Thursdays because a lot of MMA people, they usually take the day off on Sunday. You know what I mean? And most of the wrestlers are wrestling on the weekends. So, you know, we like to come down now. Do you know off the top of your head, is Ace Jiu-Jitsu open on Saturdays?
Yeah, so usually on Saturdays, usually it works out pretty well. I know that's when we have our open mats. So where, like, buddy can come in and, yeah, so, but, I mean, I could totally talk to Tim and schedule something. I always said, like, in all my interviews and stuff, I really just want to get my gym out there. I want people to hear about my gym and hear about my coaches and stuff because it's so important to me.
Definitely, for sure. So, you know, it's funny because we were hoping to have Tim on the show, but like we said, you know, he's out of town. But I saw a picture of him, and he was with Clever Luciano. Now, Clever doesn't have that. He used to have a place in Huntington Beach, and we did a few live shows from there because he was going to fight in Bellator and stuff like that, and we'd go down there quite a bit because we're in Long Beach. So we'd go down there, and he was always nice to us, took us out for Mexican food after and all that, really nice. Now, that's what we do. So we want to show also for On the Mat, we would do like just a little video and say, okay, well, look, if somebody's in this position, you know, can you show us the ghost escape or whatever, you know? So he said, yeah, but he wanted to roll. And he had me, I had him, I mean, I had him locked, you know, big time. Mounted on top, and I had him, and in my mind I'm thinking, dude, I got, there is no way this dude is getting out of this. Before I knew it, boom, just he just swept me, bam, and it was over. And I was like, dude, so when I saw that you know, Tim was with Clever Luciano, and I said, man, this is gonna be good training, this is what I'm talking about. So we definitely want to come down and check out Ace Jiu-Jitsu. So we're going to talk, we're going to work on that, and we'll definitely get Manny is a big stickler for that. If we can get out there to do a live broadcast or whatever, it's cool because we can show, you know, like a lot of people are intimidated to go, you know, if they walk in and see, you know, these guys, you know, throwing each other around or putting each other in these holds or whatever, they get a little intimidated. But, you know, when we do a live broadcast and they see, hey, man, you know, it is a family atmosphere and it gives the kids structure. You know, they you know, it even spills over into their schoolwork and stuff like that because, you know, they have structure. So we definitely want to do that. So we look forward to that. For the people listening to us, if you want to check out Eddie Bernal Jr., now I only saw at Eddie Bernal 13 on your Twitter account. Do you have any other accounts besides that one?
It's actually, it's Eddie Bernal 3, and it's, yeah, both on Twitter and on my Instagram. And then Ace Da Jiu Jitsu on Instagram also.
Yeah, so those are basically... Now, first of all, I appreciate you coming on, man. I appreciate you taking the time, you know, to talk to us and all that. I could talk your ear off, man, but, you know, only have a certain amount of time here. Because, real quick, you know, I've done pro wrestling for years, you know, and then when we got involved with the whole MMA, jiu-jitsu, grappling, you know, even judo and all that, it's such a different – I can't even explain to the people how different it is, because I'm just going to give you a quick example. When I was working for On the Mat and we were, you know, going all over doing live broadcasts, you know, like at Alan Goa's place and stuff like that, and then when the pandemic hit, you know, and I got the call from Scotty and he said, hey, you know, man, I got to pull the plug because, you know, the pandemic's going on and, you know, I had to close my shop down in Vegas, you know, and stuff like that. I was like, hey, man, no problem. Absolutely. I appreciate everything you've done for me, you know, and all that. Yeah, maybe when it's over, we can get back. Dude, 2 weeks it took people like Ed Sorres, who is the manager for Anderson Silva. And they were calling and going, hey, bro, what happened to the podcast, you know, and all that. So, well, you know, Scotty had to pull the plug on it. Dude, what do we need to do to get it back on? So people within the jiu-jitsu, even Eddie Bravo, you know, people within the jiu-jitsu community were like, dude, you know, we want it out there. You know, we're a family. What do we need to, you know, for us to help you? And I was like, you know, flabbergasted. I was like, now that's a jiu-jitsu family. They're willing to help you because they just want to keep it out there. So that's why I've always been drawn to it and keep it going. You know what I mean? Because it within the jiu-jitsu community, it's more like a family, you know, in grappling community. So we'd love to come down to Ace Jiu-Jitsu, do a live broadcast, get Ace Jiu-Jitsu out there so that people come and see, you know, what it's like. And, you know, we get that place packed, especially for the fighters too. People like Eddie Bernal Jr., that's my goal, man. I want his name out there so people get to know who he is. They're going to watch him on the UFC Fight Pass and get that place packed, because for what these guys do and the punishment that they take and the things that they go through, just like we were talking about, you know, cutting weight, And, you know, if the contracts aren't right, you got to redo them and stuff like that. I think they should be getting paid as much as possible. I think when we pack those places, you know, they're going to see it and these guys can get what they deserve. I'm a really, really big stickler for that. So we definitely look forward to that. Now, before I let you go, big fights coming up, UFC. I got to be honest, man, I'm not too interested in the main event. I'm just going to put that out there. But, you know, Poirier against Michael Chandler, that's the one I'm looking forward to. You know, now I'm always like, dude, Chandler's going to close that distance. He's going to get Poirier to the ground, and he's going to finish it. But for some reason, I don't know what happens, but then Chandler decides to start standing up and swinging. Okay, so my prediction is if he can close that distance and get him to the ground, I think that's going to get him to the promised land. But I have a feeling they're going to get to swinging, and it's going to be a stand-up war, just like when he fought Justin Gaethje or whatever. So real quick, give me your thoughts on that fight.
Yeah, that's the fight I'm most looking forward to for sure. And those two guys are two of my favorites. I look at both of those guys, and I try to take both of their games. And I really think that Justin Poirier's boxing is just the best in the UFC, and I'm up there. So I love watching him box. I think Poirier takes it because of his boxing, but, I mean, Chandler's so explosive. He's got that one hitter quitter in him, and so he can put – I mean, he saw what he did to Tony Ferguson, and he did to Pitbull. He's definitely got that. So it makes it really interesting, and he's an extremely skilled fighter, super explosive. And, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I do think that Poirier is probably going to take it because of the boxing. But, I mean, you never know, especially with Michael Chandler fighting. I mean, what he did to Dan Hooker, and just crazy, crazy. So I'm super, super excited looking at that fight. If I had to put money on it, I'd probably say Dustin Poirier takes it.
And do you kind of get that, too? I don't understand what the – like, take, like, Yoel Romero. I mean, that dude, Olympic caliber wrestler, you know what I mean? And he can, I call him the miracle of modern science, because that dude's in his 40s and he still looks like he's 20 years old or whatever. But it seems like if he would just close a distance and get him to the ground, he would, you know, suffer less damage and really, you know, but he gets in them wars too. You think maybe you just feel that, I don't want to say if he got something to prove, because you really don't, especially somebody like that, but you just want to stand up and show that you can box and that you're just not a wrestler? What do you think the mindset is on that?
Yeah, I mean, it literally just happened to me in this last fight. Like, our whole game plan almost for fight is take the guy down and you know, just ruin his life. And but, you know, this guy was – it's really hard. As someone who's super prepared and a skilled fighter, it's really hard to take him down and hold him down. And it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I just took this dude down, like, five times and he got up five times, like, I might as well just start standing up with him. And but that's the other thing too, is like a lot of times in MMA, like, you start hitting somebody and you just fall in love with it, and you know, you don't really care to hit back, you know. And so
but
I agree with you. I do think that's part of it.
And I look forward to it, because the wrestlers are just, you know, they're just so used to doing these tournaments and wrestling four or five times, you know, in one tournament and stuff. And it's just that grind, and they're always, you know, in the gym, and just it's just a different breed. I mean, when I coached for 6 years, you can kind of tell the kids that are really focused, and they just, you know, they're there and they just keep going, you know, and that to me was like we were talking about earlier, it's structured. They're just structured. They know they can't eat this because they got to make weight. And to be honest, when you think about it, it's only 4 months, really, you know, that they compete or whatever. That's what I told them. I said, man, if you can make it through this 4 months, man, we're going to get you to the promised land. So I've always been just huge on that wrestling. I love it. Not to take anything away from grappling, believe me, but I definitely look forward.
No, I agree.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, man. I mean,
absolutely.
Even when you're a fighter and you're off, you stay in the gym and it keeps your timing and everything. You know, it's just a different breed. So for the people listening, don't forget, check out Eddie Bernal Jr. If you want to check him out on social media, hopefully when you get down to the Ace Jiu-Jitsu out there in Fountain Valley, definitely want to do a live broadcast so you can see for yourself, you know, what they got going on over there. And it's weird because, you know, when we do a live broadcast, you hear everything in the background. The people kind of feel like they're there. So we definitely look forward to that. So, Eddie, I got to tell you, man, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. You know, usually when I talk to Manny, He wants me to get certain people on and give him a certain amount of time. But I'm like, dude, when I got, you know, guys like Eddie Bernal on, I got to give him at least 3 segments, bro, because we're going to have so much to talk about or whatever. So I appreciate you staying on and you know, answering some of these questions. And then the people get to know, you know, guys like Eddie Bernal, what it takes, you know, to get to the, even just to get to, you know, these fights at the Commerce Casino. It takes a lot, man. People think you just sign a waiver and go get to swinging, but there's a lot to it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we definitely look forward to that. A million thank yous for coming on, Eddie. I appreciate it. For the people listening, don't forget, check out at Eddie Bernal 3. He'll keep everybody up to date on there, so you can come down, check out some of his fights, and come check us out at Ace Jiu-Jitsu. All right, my man, a million thank yous for coming on, man. I look forward to seeing you down at Ace Jiu-Jitsu.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. For the people listeners, we'll be right back after this to close out the show, but make sure you check out Eddie Bernal at Eddie Bernal 3 so you can keep up with him. All right, Eddie, talk to you soon, man. I appreciate it. We'll be right back after this. Man, a million thank yous to Eddie Bernal for coming on. Great to hear, you know, the guys like that, man, that are hungry and paying their dues, you know, to get out there and get their name out there so they can come and check them out fighting and stuff like that. So real quick for the people listeners, don't forget, as we had Nicolet on in the first segment, big show coming up at House of Warrior Wrestling. It's Saturday, November 19th at the House of Grace. It's at 12222 Philadelphia Street in Whittier, California. And Nicolet and I will be at Hermanos Contra Cancer, you know, Brothers Fighting Cancer. It'll be this Saturday, November 12th. It's at the Barn. It's at 126 East 16th Street in the city of Costa Mesa. Adults only $10. Kids are $5. Doors open at 4. Bell time is 5 p.m. You definitely want to come out and check that out. All the proceeds go to cancer research. You know, our brother, SoCal Crazy, who has always been nice to me, always been cool with me, you know, he's putting that together so that we can, you know, get these guys taken care of. So make sure you check that out. So big ups to Nicolet Marie for coming in that first segment. And, of course, Eddie Bernal hanging with us for 3 segments. We appreciate it. So we'll see everybody here hopefully next Thursday. Hopefully Pete and Sonia will be back with us and they can take over for me. All right. We'll talk to everybody then.